Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively getting through the holiday season here, and one thing that makes life better, Taharka Brothers Ice Cream. We are delivering the 8-packs. My wife's actually done her first ever commercial after 17 years here at WNST, so she is imploring you to use the Baltimore Positive code. $56 is usually what it costs. $40.30 with the Baltimore Positive code. You can click at Baltimore Positive or at Taharka Brothers. So we're not just talking about that sweet potato crumble. We're not just talking about the peppermint bark and the eggnog. We're eating it as well. You should be as well. I'm wearing my State Fair shirt. I have curbsided, and back in the summer when it was a little different outside, we were getting the chicken and waffles and the shrimp and grits over there. El Guapo now open across the street with the Latin and Mexican flair and the cuisine. My wife and I brought some duck carnitas home last week. Delicious. Make sure you're taking advantage of all of our sponsors, including Fadley's. Coach Billick chatted last week and snuck in on Damie Hahn in our video chat last week. He delivered 12 crab cakes to his estate out in Ohio for Thanksgiving Eve, and I know that Don Mahler makes a little tradition eating some crab cakes around the holidays as well. Don, you know, with what happened last week in Baltimore County and what happened in the city, and, you know, I'm a city resident with cybersecurity, I know you wanted to reach out here at Baltimore Positive and shake things up, and unwittingly, in a small to more kind of way, you invited a guy on named Dave Hartman that I know pretty well, and I'm like, hey, you got my buddy Dave on the program this week. Nice job. So, I mean, between you finding the Rafael Alvarezes and the Jamie Costellos, who are on our original hit list and wish list a couple of years ago, and at some point, you're going to get John Waters on from me, right, Don?
I'm working on it.
Serendipity here, because we need to learn a little bit more about cybersecurity, especially when one time you were out at Greenwood and before cybersecurity was a thing about 20, 25 years ago, right?
Well, and I worried about it every single day in county government, and that's why I thought Dave Hartman from Hartman Associates was the perfect guest to come on and talk a little bit, Dave, about your company. But it seems to me that when I look at what's on your website, and I've heard you talk a little bit off camera, that what's really important, whether you're a government or whether you're you know, a nonprofit, or whether you're in the private sector, and it's Hartman Executive Advisors, that it's really an integrated approach that matters, right? You can't think of cyber separate from a comprehensive IT strategy. Do I have that right?
I think you're right. And good morning to both of you, Nestor and Don. Thanks for having me on. It's really a pleasure to be speaking with you, and I really appreciate the opportunity. But you're right. I think, you know, look, I don't think there are too many executives in the world today who don't understand that cyber is more than a tech problem. It is a business enterprise risk problem. But the question is, are they acting that way? And are they putting in place procedures and strategy and culture that answers the mail that would say, yeah, you do, you know, you act like you get it. It's not just talk. And I think that's still what a lot of companies and organizations are challenged with. And there are a few things, and I do think that CEOs ought to be thinking about. Happy to talk about those today. You know, the fact of the matter is, any organization can be hit. And, and they're not the bad guys when they get hit. I mean, sometimes we think about the companies that get hit as the bad guys. They're the victims of crime. We would never blame a bank, for instance, for getting robbed. Unless they left the safe open, you know, and then that's a whole other issue. But they're victims of crime, and we have to remember that. But anyone can get hit. And of course, for any CEO, it's about, you can't ever eliminate risk. Don, you know that. But you can mitigate it. And that's the challenge, I think, that every CEO, every executive, every leader has to think about.
Well, where does it start, Dave? I mean, this is such a timely topic. I mean, parents all across Baltimore County are, you know, they're certainly affected. Teachers, I mean, my goodness, I think of everything that teachers have been through for the past 6 months, and now they've got to worry about this. Certainly from the superintendent on down, they're trying to do it. As Nestor said, we had a mayor in the city trying to deal with it. Businesses, you said there are certain things that all of these entities probably are doing, trying to do, or should be doing. walk our audience through some of the things that businesses and government entities should be doing to make themselves safer.
Sure. Thanks, Don. Happy to do that. So I think it starts with understanding that, and Hartman Executive Advisors at the company, yeah, we really do. We spent 16 years old. We've got about 60 professionals working for us. We're all about sort of providing that independent strategic advice to clients about how to best put together an effective IT technology strategy as their CIO advisor, and then also putting together that effective cyber strategy. And so it's great that we're talking about putting the two together here on the radio this morning. But I think it starts with understanding that, yes, there is, of course, an IT security component to cyber. You have to do the right thing. And there's talk, you know, there's always talk about what organizations have done the right things. Have they patched their systems? Are they securing their systems properly? And of course, there is that IT security component of cyber that the CIO absolutely has to worry about, or the IT director, whoever's leading IT for that particular organization. Our message, though, is that there's also a separate cyber strategy component that probably doesn't belong in the office of the CIO, should be separate and should be thought about more as a business risk role. And so when I think about, and so I'm going to use two terms, not every company can employ these two, but when you think about sort of not the role itself, but what the role should be doing for the company, that's what I want you to think about. So think about the CIO as the strategic head of IT who's trying to advance capacity and capability for his or her business, trying to create automation, integration, trying to make it, you know, make your company a better place to work and a better place for customers to come and interact, right? The CISO, the Chief Information Security Officer, is also about that, but is first and foremost about, wait a minute, time out. Is that new capability we're introducing going to introduce more risk than it does offer capacity? And so they're more about stop until you can prove to me it's safe, where the CIO is more about let's go. Let's push forward, and let's make sure it's safe. And so you get this sort of the down.
Dave, it's so interesting. That example that you just gave is so interesting because I spoke with the chief information officer of a large entity over the weekend who talked about that he had brought on a chief security officer that you're talking about a year ago. And I probably thought they were the same thing. And he said, I've got to tell you, I brought on one of the best people in the country. He makes my life miserable every single day, but that's what I need him to do. And I thought that was an interest. Is that an apt description of what the chief security officer does?
I think it has to be. Now, I'm going to say something that, you know, if your CIO was on the air today, he might not agree with me. And that's okay. But I would say, you know, it depends on where that person sat. Now, there is a slight difference between the chief security officer and the chief information security officer, but let's leave that alone for now. We don't believe that the CISO should work for the CIO. Now, the way you described it, it sounds like he brought him on. We believe the CISO, or the person who is at least thinking about cyber risk from a strategic perspective, enterprise risk perspective, ought to work in parallel to the CIO. Because what happens is, and I've seen it happen in some very large organizations, you know, when the CIO wants to bring something on and the CISO is below him or her saying, time out, when it really wants to happen and the CIO really is under pressure to bring it on, well, let's just hold off on that. Whereas the CISO who works here says, no, we're not going to hold off on that. We have certain pro forma, we have certain due diligence we have to do. And so we believe they need to be like this. Maybe both working for the CEO, maybe the CISO reports to a chief risk officer, depending on the industry. And again, not every company can have those full-time roles, but it's important that the CEO understand there is a difference. And you want your CISO or the person who's playing that role or approximating that role to be thinking about risk first. And how do we mitigate that risk? How can we introduce this capability without introducing the risk? Whereas you want your CIO to be thinking about risk, but obviously they're thinking about innovation, automation. So it just kind of puts the two as partners But they should be at odds with each other a little bit. There should be a healthy tension between the primary role of the two in the organization. And so many people either put the CIO as the CISO, or they put them under, and that creates sort of a fox guarding the hen house kind of an approach, and doesn't give you that healthy, you know, sort of healthy dialogue, you know, that you should have.
Dave, you know, when you talk about this and saying, I would say that person and Don saying he was the biggest pain in the company, right? Or that there is a part of paranoia that's very, very healthy when it comes to this. And I would just say on a personal level, right? Like, we've all had a credit card get blinked or know someone that has, and how that sort of wrecks you. My wife and I, during this COVID period, we woke up one day in June and the bill for our Easy Pass came, and there were like $20 charges on the Verrazano Bridge. You know, somebody had blinked our Easy Pass in New York City, racked up $300 or $400 of running across tolls. Well, we had masks on here. Our car was downstairs. I would say that being up all night, being paranoid about how any of that happens or wondering how it all happens, but when you're running the school system or anything involved in a municipality, that online hackers and international hackers, this is the way they transact business, right? And I guess from a small-time person that blinked us for a couple $100, that's going on at a level we cannot comprehend. And for someone trying to build infrastructure, they don't have time to be paranoid about that stuff, right?
Well, you have to be paranoid, but I mean, like any business and any business owner or business leader, you have to weigh the risk against the reward, right? And so, of course, you can't. I mean, you could eliminate cyber risk completely from your organization. That's called unplugging from the cyber world. But you can't do that because then you can't contract. You know, you can't contract business. And so, then the question becomes: how do we best protect ourselves? How do we best become as aware as possible of our risks and mitigate those risks? And then, most importantly, how do we prepare for when it happens so that we can quickly recover and safely recover without jeopardizing our organization? So it really becomes about, you know, about sort of the appropriate amount of safeguard to your risk, understanding how important is the risk, how important is that data piece or that asset, how do we mitigate it, and then how do we prepare for the eventual or the inevitable problem. And I had a stat I wanted to read to you. I was looking over some past information. Talked about, and this is kind of shocking. You know, today in 2020, 74% of organizations, it was a survey by the Poneman Institute on behalf of IBM, 74% of institutions say they're not prepared, or, you know, they don't have an incident response plan. It's ad hoc, or it's not complete, or it's not consistent. 74% say they don't have an incident response plan. In other words, when an incident happens, how will you respond in those first minutes and hours and days? And then, and real quickly, if I could, Lester, of the ones that have them, the report says that of the ones that that have them, 39% of companies that had a the 39% of companies that have them had an incident response plan were prepared and had an incident, versus 62% of ones that weren't prepared had an incident that they couldn't recover from. So in other words, you got to be prepared, and preparation makes it less likely that you're going to have a crippling event when it happens. And yet there are so many companies that aren't prepared, aren't thinking about it, and thinking about how do we respond when it happens.
Dave, run me through sort of the genesis of one of these. And it doesn't need to be a specific one, but what happened to the city? What happened to the county school system? All right. Code red, 3 a.m, someone's hacked us, everything's down, what the hell? Then the email comes and ransom or ransomware. I don't know much about this. This is why we bring guys like you on. All right, you're the CEO, you're the CIO, you know, you're security, whatever. This happens to your municipality, your school, your whatever, your business. What does that mean? Where are these people? What do they want? And how does one recover? What is the pathway once that happens? What really goes on?
Great question, Nestor. And I'm going to answer it more from what I hope happens in the month before that morning, more than I'm going to answer it from the morning after. So, and I think that's important for CEOs who are listening, who probably aren't in the same boat as maybe the county school system was last week. ideally you want to think about that morning months before. And you got to think about who's on your team, who is going to lead, first of all, who's your cyber incident leader, who's on your team. Do you have, everybody has a lawyer, but do you have a lawyer who understands cyber, who can review your contract from that lens? Do you have insurance? Of course you have insurance, but do you have an insurance agent who understands cyber and is appropriately putting the right kind of the cyber insurance in place for you? Do you have the operational leaders who understand policy, procedure, and making sure that you enact the appropriate policies and procedures and then implement them appropriately? Do you have the right understanding of risk that you know how to safeguard each individual risk? And then the one that most companies forget about, they spend so much money locking down systems and keeping people from the outside out. The thing that is most important is, does your company spend time training and creating awareness within your company that this is even a problem? Do you spend time training your employees how to recognize problems, how to recognize that nefarious email, how to recognize that thing they shouldn't say yes to or click on? And there are so many companies that spend so much money on the big systems, and then they leave the front door open, metaphorically, by not training their employees. And that's the cheapest thing they can do to best prepare themselves. So those are all the things that, the CEO, you're thinking about ahead of time, such that when you get that call, you know what you're going to do. You know who's speaking for you. You even have, I think it's important for companies to understand, do they have a PR representative who knows how to speak on behalf of the company in a crisis? The time to think about that is not the time after someone spoke for you who said the wrong thing. And so you put all that team together, and then you have the right backup strategies. You have the right ways to protect the right kind of information, your most critical jewels, so to speak. You put the most in your home. You put the family jewels in the safe. The things that are most valuable. Other things you might leave out. You can't lock everything up, and so you're treating things with the right kind of security based on its value to you. And that way, when you do, and then you have the right plan for recovering your data. And that way, when you do have that incident, you're much better prepared for how to deal with it. And that's not a statement at all on what happened to any organization or industry that that may have had an attack. But I can tell you, if you're a CEO, that's what I'd be thinking about in the months now, so that when you do have it, and it's going to happen, and you may not even know about it, because what happens is these things get buried in your data, in your network, and then they reveal themselves at the right time. So you've got to think about the inevitability and plan for it accordingly.
Dave, in your experience, I mean, the question that I hear from folks just out and about, when you run into people, you talk to them, is, who are these folks? Is there an Emma? Who are these hackers? I mean, is it some 18-year-old kid in a basement who's just fooling around, or is it some kind of sophisticated crime syndicate or something in the middle? Who are they, and what's the end game?
Well, I mean, you can call them crime syndicates, but they call themselves business people. And yes, of course, they're still the 18-year-old hackers, but these are now sophisticated businesses who are selling information and illegal information and illegal asset as an asset, as a business asset. And they're selling this to the highest bidder. And so imagine, in this world, especially in education, where now the computer is such an integral piece of the educational process, what better asset to attack than the asset where, parents and teachers, lose the ability to teach their youngsters? How valuable is that? And if you're in that industry, you're looking at that as one of the most valuable assets that you can go after. And so you have to think about that if you're the CEO of any school or school system. Healthcare data is among the most valuable data. And so if you're a healthcare organization, or if you're an organization supporting healthcare, you have to think about, where are you exposing your company or your bank or your client to risk that could put that data at jeopardy? Now, if you're a plumber, maybe no one wants that plumbing data, but you could still be a victim. And so even the most simplistic companies have to think about, because Remember the Target incident from years ago. It wasn't targeted any wrong. It was their HVAC vendor who exposed the big giant company to risk. And so if you're a small company and you have large clients, you have to think about how am I exposing my client to unnecessary risk? And if you're the company, you have to think about how are my vendors exposing me to unnecessary risk? Does that answer your question?
I think so.
I think it does.
Dave Hartman is here, a Hartman Advisor. Dave, I'm going to pull your website up real quick. Take us on a little tutorial on the way out the door here so everybody knows exactly what you do. I know of you as the guy from Accelerant that we get coffee with and meet people with and hear great stories. And we have so many mutual friends, including Bill Cole and a whole bunch of other people out there. I knew a little bit about your business because I've sat at your table and heard your elevator speech. But give it for our audience right now.
Yeah, we've done some good interviews together, some good sports interviews together over the years. But so Hartman, at its core, Hartman Executive Advisors, we're a 16-year-old company. Like I said, we got 55, 60 professionals working for us. We are proud to say that we're one of the few, if not only, completely independent advisors to businesses and organizations in the Mid-Atlantic. And so when our clients hire us, they know it's not, we're giving them advice that is based on our experience, our perspective, based on what we feel is in the best interest of our clients. And they know that we're not just saying something because we sell product or sell service. We don't sell or profit from any technology system, software, or thing. And that really does set us apart. And there's nothing wrong with these companies that are giving good advice and selling stuff, but sometimes CEOs and CFOs need that independent advice. Because quite frankly, and you guys know it, not every business owner is an expert in technology. And so it's important that business leaders and business owners have that trusted colleague, that trusted resource that can help them evaluate their IT strategy and their cyber risk strategy as a component to building their business.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's great to have you on, and at least when things happen in the news, we try to get to the root of it. And I know Don and I got together that first morning, and Don had his executive hat on. Don had grave concern, right? Like, not just that, because your daughter's a teacher. So it does affect, the ripple effect of all of these things winds up coming to us, and we scratch our heads and wonder, who are these people? Where do these hackers come from, and how do you mitigate the risk?
Oh, without a doubt, Nestor, and my friend, I think, again, you go back to county government, you're thinking of 911 services and all the backup and the protections that we had with all of that. I think these are the issues that keep folks up at night. Dave, before we let you go, I know it's not necessarily your bailiwick, but I can imagine folks out there listening right now saying, geez, I'm not a business, but what should I be doing in my house and in my own computer software to be taking care of myself? What should folks in their homes, what should Nestor and his wife be doing, and my wife and I and my kids, what should we be doing as just ordinary citizens?
I think that, and this is just me being a guy, like I would never have one of those Alexa things around, because I'm telling you, dude, my wife and I had a conversation, just had a conversation about stone crabs last week, and I started getting served ads. And I don't know how that's happening, but I'm getting really, really, my Dundalk eye, my Eastwood eye, Hartman, my curly eye is like, the hell's good? The walls are listening to me, right? I mean, there's a little feeling, yeah, I think, for all of us that everywhere we're going out, cookies and how we get marketed, we feel a big brother looking at us.
Nestor, it's so interesting. I'm going to jump back to Dave to ask him real quick as we get out of here what people can do. But that example you just gave, last week, Linda, I forget what the item was. Let's say it was widgets. She was on the computer looking for some information on widgets on her computer. Within minutes, I had ads for widget showing up on my Facebook
widget world. World of widgets. Buy your widgets here. Of course.
Amazing. So, Dave, what do people do?
So here's what I would say. Two things. First of all, you got to think about, today's world, every home is a business office and every home is a classroom. And so you can't think about it as your home. Now you got to think about it as, you're doing business from home, and your home may be the thing that exposes your business. So just think about that for a second, or your school. I would do two things. First of all, if you're going to connect to the internet with these applications, these, whatever it is, TVs or apps, appliances, Internet of Things, never leave the out-of-the-box security settings in place. If you don't know how to change them, call the company, call a friend. You've got to change the out-of-the-box security settings, the passwords, the, you know, the settings, such that they are configured for your best interest.
That's so my one. Password should be ABC123, right?
ABC123, absolutely. And then the second thing is the simple thing, right? If you're not using, with Alexa, turn it off. If you're not using your TV, cover the screen. You know, there's a way you can cover the camera. You know, I have a little piece of cardboard that flips over that when I'm not using my smart TV, I just cover the lens. So little things like that you can do. But the most important thing is, if you're going to have these things, think about all the things that are connected and make sure that you or a friend, your 14-year-old kid, goes in and changes those settings so they're not the out-of-the-box settings. Those two things will take you a long way.
Well, Nestor, that's pretty Baltimore positive right there. I think that's a good place to.
Well, Dave, I got time on my hands. You know, my wife's going away for a couple weeks for the holidays, and the holidays coming. You're thinking of all these checklist items at the end of the year, right? Yeah. Like how could it be a little tighter? And you know, we're still trying to figure out the easy pass hack, bro. I don't know what to tell you. Hey, man, I hope we can get together again sometime soon. And the Marianne Scullys of the world, the Bill Coles, there's so many great, great people, the John Gords, all these people I've met through Accelerant. I appreciate you taking some time with us today and coming on and educating us. We appreciate it.
I appreciate you guys. I love what you guys are doing with spreading the Baltimore good word. And thanks for what you guys are doing.
We'll give a little shout out to the East Side there before you go, or no? A little old school, or no?
Hey, man, never forget your East Baltimore roots, baby.
Well, Duluth keeps telling me that as well. That's what Mueller tells me. Dave Hartman, Hartman Associates, Hartman Advisors.com. All their services are up. You can find them there. 410-612-3011. You can throw me a note, ness@baltimorepositive.com. On behalf of former Baltimore County Executive Don Mueller, we are putting together these incredible conversations. Jamie Costello joined us this week, Rafael Alvarez as well. Lots and lots of Ravens coverage in the aftermath of Pittsburgh and Dallas as we try to figure this all out. And cooling you down for the holidays with some peppermint bark, some eggnog, and whatever you do, do not sleep on the sweet potato crumble. I got to learn how to say that. Sweet potato crumble. 8 delicious pints of Taharka delivered to your door at the time you tell them to deliver it to you. You sign up online, you save $15.70 by using the Baltimore Positive code. On behalf of Fadley's and State Fair and El Guapo and Mueller and Gary Realty and all that we're doing around here to move forward in 2021, we are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore Positive.